evening, folks. Welcome back to Hoops HD. It's time for the Bracket Racket, our weekly hour-long Sunday night show where we take a look at what's going on in college basketball and give you our analysis and thoughts on the games that have already happened and talk about the games upcoming in the first part of the week. Joined by our regular panelists for the Bracket Racket, first in full motion video, Kyle Lamb with us. Kyle, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing wonderful. It's Thanksgiving week, and I am thankful for a lot of things in college basketball, mainly that the poke and grab and push and beat up and bully and pound to an oblivion is gone from the game. It is just amazing seeing all these 80 and 90-point games.
Although we still have some of the poking's just getting called. I mean, we had 61 fouls called in a game earlier today. So it in most cases, though, it is really leading to quite an increase in scoring, and that is heartening to see. I agree with you. Also joining us, although not in full motion video due to Thanksgiving technical difficulties, David Griggs. David, what's happening?
Oh, not a whole lot. I guess, as everybody knows, like, I'm actually in New York for the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. They're working on the David Griggs float and balloon, and because of that, I just don't have the... They are going to have that, aren't they?
I didn't ask anybody. I was told that, yes.
Yeah, I assumed they're going to have that. But anyway, because of that, I'm just... I was trying to get it on my iPod, but I didn't have the right apps, and it's hard to download apps when you don't have any arms.
That's so true.
Can we? These are things the David Griggs agent is supposed to take care of ahead of time.
Yeah. Can we get you a like a helper and an intern of some sort? Would that help?
Intern, free labor, yes.
Actually, with the recent lawsuits, I don't think we're allowed to have free interns anymore. So that might be a problem.
Maybe yeah. So. I don't know.
So, a lot to talk about here tonight, and if you'd like to get in on the conversation, you can tweet us at HoopsHD, or you can leave a comment on the YouTube link that you're watching right now, and we would love to hear from you. First off, guys, I think we need to chat a little bit about the games that have gone on the last few days, and I'll be honest, I was in New York City for most of that time period, so I could give you a really in-depth analysis of anything that happened in New York City during that time period. Other games beyond that, I saw a little bit of some stuff today, but for the most part, I'm kind of going to be relying on you guys to give me an idea of what I missed. So let me go around the table here. Let me start with David. By the way, Lee Delvecchia will be joining us later. He's a little bit late. He's coming back from Mohegan Sun, from what I understand. He was there for some action earlier on today. But, David, let me start with you. Let me get your top moment from the last few days that really sticks out. It could be something as recently as 5 minutes ago, or it could be something as long ago as Wednesday.
Well, I guess one of the things that sticks out to me is just how well UMass has played down in Charleston. They have the championship game tonight. They're going up against a Clemson team who has not lost but hasn't looked nearly as good. I mean, UMass has quite the impressive resume, and they just keep building on it. The win over Boston College is looking less incredible, but, you know, they've beaten LSU. They went out to Charleston. They beat a Nebraska team that we all think is pretty good. They beat a ranked New Mexico team handily. I mean, it's just how good UMass has looked all throughout the week and all throughout the season. And then the other thing today was North Carolina. I mean, they fell behind early to Louisville, and I just thought Louisville was going to run away from them. But after falling behind 9, they outscored Louisville by 20 the rest of the game. They were really good in transition. That being said, Louisville's transition defense was awful, but they were really good in transition against a team that typically presses well and doesn't allow that. So that was one of the other standout moments after seeing North Carolina struggle so much.
All right. Kyle, to you.
Yeah, I mean, the North Carolina Indiana or the North Carolina Louisville game was certainly interesting, but you said it could be as recently as 5 minutes ago, and I'm going to go with that. It's just watching this, you know, that Vermont Duke game or catching the last 5-10 minutes of it was just it was shocking. I had turned this off early in the game, thinking this was going to be a blowout, as I think a lot of people probably did. And next thing I know, Vermont's within a point. I turn it back on and. It's just, it's just crazy to think that they had a chance to win, you know, at Cameron Indoor Stadium, you know, a 1-4 Vermont club. I mean, this Duke team is, I was sure singing the praises early in the season, and it looks like I was a little presumptuous on that because they are struggling to stop anybody right now. They're, you know, they're giving up a lot of points, and I don't see, you know, at least right now, I don't see it getting any better anytime soon.
We had a request from Wendy D's Hoke on my Facebook page when I posted the link. Please discuss the home court foul call at Shamron Indoor Stadium. Anybody want to comment on that? Kyle, I mean, you just mentioned the Duke game, so there you go.
Is she talking about the one with 5 seconds left?
I'm assuming.
Yeah, the one that wasn't a foul. The one that wasn't a foul that was called a foul. That's the one she's talking about, I assume.
I to be honest, I'm ashamed for saying this, but I actually thought it was an okay call. At first I thought it was a bad call. When I saw the replay, he did not hit him on the arm. Now, it probably was one of those calls you could let go, but he did get some of the arm before he got ball. So I don't think it was an atrocious call. I mean, it's one that maybe you let go, but I don't think it was terrible.
David did, though, right, David?
It was terrible. It was, I mean, I thought he was in position. I thought he got all ball. Vermont comes up with the ball, and it's a whistle. I thought it was like an Kyle knows about this, the anticipated call that officials sometimes do. This is rather alarming for Duke. I mean, this is not one of those, I mean, it's cliche to say, well, this is a good team, they're under the radar, you don't know about them. This is a bad team. This is a team that lost by over 20 to Bryant and to Providence and St. Joe. I mean, their one win was against a really bad Siena team, so this was surprising.
You know what they say about, team. As far as the foul call, you know, reasonable puppets can disagree.
Well, I'm sure there are some officials that fit into that category. But anyway, it's interesting that you mentioned Duke, Kyle, because I think I'm starting to feel the same way that you just described your feelings for Duke. I'm feeling that way about Michigan State a little bit, and let me explain this. I mean, they've obviously struggled against Columbia, and people were willing to shrug that off because they had beaten Kentucky very recently. Then they struggled against Portland. They ended up coming back and winning that game relatively handily, but it wasn't the foregone conclusion that many people thought. Then last night, they play Oklahoma on a neutral floor, and they go down 11, I think, in the first 10 minutes of the game. And, you know, they make a big run, and they've got several chances to knock Oklahoma out of the game, and they can't do it. And it's a close game down the way to, frankly, an Oklahoma team that I don't think is very good. I mean, I think they're a fringe tournament team at best. You know, it seems like between that and Louisville and, you know, some of the other inconsistencies we're seeing in these top teams, I realize it's early, but I feel like we're really lacking a dominant squad so far just in the limited sample set that we've had up to this point.
Yeah, and if there is a dominant squad, it hasn't been identified yet.
I'd also like to throw Michigan in on that because they just needed a 10-0 run to get back within 1 point of Charlotte on a neutral floor.
Yeah.
Michigan's MO is get down by double digits and then they have a chance.
Yeah.
It worked against Kansas. I mean, yeah. I thought that may have been what lost it for them in the national championship game. They didn't get down by double digits early enough.
I don't know, Kyle. What do you think? I mean, am I being overly worried about this, or is this something that these squads need to really kind of be wondering about?
You know, no. I think it's fair. I think you hit the nail on the head, and that we're seeing a lot of inconsistency from everybody right now, except for maybe I think Kansas is probably has been the most consistent team so far. You know, I think it's just maybe it's a matter that we don't have a dominant team in college basketball. And I go back to what I said. I think when you were, you know, absent from the midweek podcast, I mentioned that I think one of the things that people are forgetting is because so many of the top teams this year are dependent on freshmen and sophomores, I kind of think that, you know, maybe this is to be expected a little bit. Now, Michigan State doesn't have that excuse because they're a junior and senior laden club, but, you know, they shouldn't be struggling with consistency this early. But I think with some of the other clubs, you know, relying on freshmen, it's kind of understandable that they're hit or miss. But yeah, I mean, Michigan State doesn't have that excuse. So I don't think you're being unreasonable. I think Michigan State, this is 4 or 5 games now. I mean, they looked a little sluggish against Virginia Tech the night before. So, I mean, yeah, this is like 4 games now where Michigan State has been very, very perplexing.
Yeah, it's I mean, North Carolina, I think, fits into that category as well. Obviously, they struggled against Richmond. They lost to Belmont. Then they turned around and beat Louisville. Now, you know, David, you were watching that game. Does this speak more to North Carolina, or does it speak more to Louisville?
I actually kind of think it speaks equally to both. I mean, Louisville just did not get back on defense. I mean, I think North Carolina must have had 6 or 7 buckets in transition to where Louisville just wasn't even across midcourt, which is very, very uncharacteristic of them. But at the same time, you got to give North Carolina credit for continuing and take advantage of that and point that out. So I think it kind of speaks to both of them. North Carolina played really well, and Louisville didn't.
So, you know, looking at a few other games that happened here over the past few days, guys, you know, it's been interesting watching some of these squads dealing with what they've dealt with and what they've been able to do. You know, there seemed to be some teams that were very clearly a bit overrated coming into this season, and I think maybe example one might be Virginia Commonwealth. They've obviously struggled a bit in various phases of the game. I mean, not overly so necessarily. I mean, their defense has still been pretty good, but they got destroyed by Florida State earlier on this week. And they didn't look terribly impressive in the game versus Long Beach State, and then they lose today to Georgetown. I mean, losing to Georgetown, that isn't necessarily a major upset, but for a team that was ranked 10th in the nation, I should know better, but I was expecting more, given both their past track record and what people seem to be regarding this team as.
Well, this is their past track record. VCU routinely loses half of their games in the first 5 or 6 games of the year.
Right, but hold on. Now, hold on. They do, you're right. But last year, they lost to Wichita State, who made the Final Four,
yeah.
Duke, who's Duke, and Missouri, who you know, was a very talented team that was undercoached. You know, now, a couple of years ago, that was one thing. Because, I mean, they beat to Seton. Yeah. They lost to Seton Hall. They lost to Georgia Tech. I get that. But this year's team, I mean, was a lot more highly regarded than the team from a couple of years ago, and I feel like getting blown out by 20 to a Florida State team that, you know, then turned around and did they lose to Northeastern, or they barely won?
They barely won.
Yeah, they barely won. That's not going to be a Florida State team we're going to look at the end of the year, and they're like, wow, this is a real world-beating sort of team.
Right. I'm just not concerned about VCU. I mean, I think they're still going to end up having a big year. I just think that they're doing what they do in November.
Well, you mentioned track record, though. We've seen this from VCU before. The problem with VCU is that teams that don't take care of the ball well, they're going to absolutely throttle because, I mean, their defense is great when the pressure is getting turnovers. But we saw it against Michigan last year. We saw it again today against Georgetown. When they're not turning you over, they have a tough time beating you because their half court defense is just I don't want to say it's bad, but it's not great, and their offense is not good enough to beat you in a half court game. So this is going to be an ongoing problem with the VCU system.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, okay, that's a good point, but they played a Florida State team that I think is either worst or second worst in the entirety of Division I. in turnover rate right now. Like they're turning the ball over on almost a quarter of their possessions. They turned the ball over 25 times against VCU, and VCU lost by 18. That to me is a problem. Like that's
an incredible accomplishment as well.
that's an amazing assessment of yours there to conclude that is a problem.
I mean, I mean the big thing here is VCU in that game shot 29.3%. And, you know, you look at their shooting rate so far on the season, they're shooting 32% from 3, 47.5% from 2, 65% from the line. I don't care how many turnovers you force, I don't know that that's sustainable long term if you can't shoot the ball better than that.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, as the stats bear out in that game, you're not going to beat anybody shooting that way, even if you're turning them over, let alone if you're not turning them over.
Right, but I'm saying I think that's a problem. Like, you know, VCU in their past years has been able to survive a bit off of this idea that they're not going to necessarily Yeah, they're not going to light the world on fire from certain elements of their game. But last year, for instance, they were almost a top 50 team shooting the ball from two. They were about a top 100 team shooting the ball from three. The year before that, they couldn't shoot worth a lick. But the year before that, they could. And, you know, I mean, and if you think about it, you know, last year they, you know, what were they? They were, they were five seed last year in the tournament. And they look like they were going to – they were everybody's trendy pick to go to the Sweet 16. The year before that, they were a 12 seed. And, they almost beat Indiana in the second round. But even in that game, their lack of shooting really bothered them. If this is another season where they can't shoot, then I think at the very least the top 10 ranking was way out of bounds.
It was, and I think it was based largely on – well, I mean, it was based on how much they had coming back in an early road win at Virginia. That was kind of an ugly game, but how many people watched it?
I did.
Yeah, I know you did. We all did. But you don't vote.
I tell the
voters how to vote, and they don't listen to me, so I just assume.
Kyle didn't watch it, so, you know, I mean, let's we didn't all watch it, but no. So anyway, something to be concerned about, I think, with VCU, and a nice win by Georgetown, obviously. And this is a Georgetown team that obviously needed a big win, as they've dropped two of their first three games on the season. They lost at Oregon, they lost at Northeastern. It's funny, with the game that they played today, Georgetown has played one game on their home floor, four games on neutral courts, and no games on the road. So take that for what it's worth. That's some unique scheduling there. The tournament, the selection committee will love at least half of that, the wins.
I guess all we're finding out right now is that VCU's kryptonite is teams that play Northeastern.
Yeah. Yes, that's a good point. It's terrible that they were in that tournament then. But a few other games of note that we should probably mention. As I mentioned, we've got this Charlotte Michigan game going on right now. That one is about 9 minutes to go in the second half, and Charlotte's still up in that one. You got Oregon kind of struggling with San Francisco at this stage. We'll keep you posted on that game.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, that's one to keep an eye on. Earlier on in the week, of course, you had Indiana, Connecticut. I want to save that because I know Lee has some comments he wants to make on that game when he gets here. But you also had a couple of other games of note. And, you know, one of them I think that needs to be mentioned, and Kyle, I'm not picking on you. I was arguing with Lee about it over the weekend as well. Nebraska struggling a bit in this tournament setting. They've lost a couple of games now. Are you still as high on them as you were before the week started?
No, I'm still on the bandwagon, but I got my feet dangling a little bit. I will say this. I'm not going to hang my head. I think that they lost to two decent teams. UAB, it's hard to say how good they're going to be, but UMass, I think, is a quality club. I would say that I think this week has shown me that I think Nebraska is clearly much improved. They're going to be a competitive team this year. They did get a win against a bad Georgia team today. I don't think they're going to be ready to take that next step and get in the tournament. Just for practical reasons that they're going to miss some opportunity to get good wins in non-conference, but also because I think that they're just not ready to play consistently enough. But I do think they're going to be a tough team. They're not going to be an easy win this year in the Big Ten. I don't think they're ready to get in the tournament just yet.
The one thing I'm concerned about with Nebraska, because I bear no ill will towards Nebraska, I just didn't think they were ready. So I'm glad you're back on my page with this. But they're running out of time to pick up good out-of-conference wins. They've really only got two now left on the resume. They travel to Creighton in a couple of weeks, and then they travel to Cincinnati, and then they get into the thick of Big Ten play. And I think that's going to be a real problem for them if they do have tournament aspirations, having lost the two games, really, that were winnable against teams that might be in the tournament picture. So
they're going to have to win at least one of those, I think, to have a tournament-caliber resume at the end of the year.
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
It's worth pointing out that they are playing one or two, at least, tournament-caliber teams in conference. Not like they're going to be able to pick up big wins.
Here's the thing, and I've been doing this research for an article that I'm writing, but here's the problem, and Kyle, I'd be curious to get both of your thoughts on this. But
I think I know where you're going.
You're going with this because I heard you talk about it on the Crimson Cast show.
Yeah. If you look at the past 10 years of Big Ten teams that were kind of in that 8-10 to 10-8 range, or you know, the 7-9 to 9-7 range. A lot of them have been left out of the tournament because they didn't have any out of conference wins. Trying to get by on just in conference quality wins, the tournament selection committee has been very, very harsh about that. And it's not just Big Ten teams. I mean, we saw it last year. You know, okay, so Iowa got left out, and you could have argued that they had two quality non-conference wins. Virginia got left out, and they won at Wisconsin, and they also won in conference at home against all three of the Carolina schools.
They lost to Old Dominion.
Penn State, it was in 2009, no out-of-conference wins, but they had wins at Michigan State. They swept Illinois. They beat Purdue, Michigan, and Minnesota all at home.
Yeah, they had six top 25 wins. I do remember that.
But I
think they like weren't all but one of them at home or something.
Yeah, two of those were on the road. Michigan State and Illinois were on the road that year.
Really? Okay, wow.
So
but yeah, I do remember that being in it. So if you enter conference play, yeah, you do have to, I think, go 10-8, 11-7. You basically have to force them to take you because – that's a good point, and it's not just with the Big Ten, it's everybody. I mean, it happened to Virginia Tech countless times.
I would, you know, the funny thing is, though, it's inconsistent because the mid-majors, Iona, I'm looking at you, can get away with it, but if you're in a major conference, you can't.
Well, yeah. Iona went on the road and won. They didn't beat tournament teams, but they played in tough environments and won.
That does seem to have a little bit of an impact. I haven't done that deep of an examination, but last year, you have Iowa, Virginia, Maryland, and Baylor, all pretty much in the same boat, all with anywhere between 0 and 2 out-of-conference wins and at least 2 good in-conference wins, and they all got left out. This is something, it's not just Nebraska, it's also something that Indiana's got to deal with. It's also something that, some of these other teams are going to have to deal with. And, you know, you look at a team like, well, Georgetown may be a bad example because I don't anticipate they're going to struggle that much in the Big East. But but you look at some of these Pac-12 teams, for instance, and they may be struggling a little bit now, but the fact that they're playing out of their conference, the fact that they're at least putting themselves in some kind of a position where they can have something on the resume, I think that's going to put them in better shape than the teams that aren't really testing themselves.
Like Colorado beating Harvard today. I mean, I think that's a good example. I mean, it's not a great win, but it's a good win that's going to help them, you know, if they're in a bubble situation. So
I think Colorado, I mean, they get out there and play teams. They did. They played Baylor. They played the front range schedule. I mean, we're all three basically agreeing with each other. You have to play teams out of conference.
You have to win a couple.
You have to win a couple. I mean, the Colorado game, I mean, is that as good as it could have been? Because, I mean, it was a home game, so probably not.
Your point, it's better than the Citadel.
Exactly. You know, and so, yeah, it's not just playing the games. It's also actually winning one or two of them. And that's something that, you know, I think you have to take your hat off to the teams that are actually playing them and are able to pull off one or two. So yeah, that's something to keep in mind as we move forward. Because even though it's very early, I mean, we haven't even finished November yet. We haven't gotten to the quarter pole, so to speak. There's already some teams where you look at the rest of their non-conference schedule and you're like, guys, you got one, maybe two opportunities left to give yourself something to sell to the committee before the selection show day starts.
I want to preface, not really preface because we're already deep into the point, but I want to qualify this by saying we're not ruling these teams out from the tournament because they don't pick up non-conference wins. No. What we're saying is if you get in a situation where you're on the bubble and it's a borderline situation, because you don't have non-conference wins, you're often going to see yourself left out of the tournament. That's not to say if an Indiana goes 12-6 in the Big Ten, they're obviously going to be in the field.
Yes.
But if they go 9-9 in the Big Ten and don't have any non-conference wins, that's a different story.
Very well explained.
And even Virginia last year, you know, like I mentioned, they were 11-7 in what was granted kind of a weak ACC, but they were still 11-7 in a major conference. They had a Pomeroy rating of 40. They got left out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, so this is just something that year after year, this is where our scheduling consulting business need, you know, we talk about all the time, needs to happen, because it seems like every year coaches put themselves in this situation where they get left out and they get angry and they don't understand why their teams aren't in. And it's like, guys, this is not rocket science.
Well, if you're not going to listen to David Griggs, who are you going to listen to?
Well, and
someone
that's
with
very
arms.
True.
I'm sorry, that was a low blow, and hit back because you don't have arms. But yeah, sorry. Anyway,
It's good that it's good that I don't have video because they don't like to see puppets cry.
Anyway, anything else from the last week that you guys wanted to mention before we move on?
Gosh, I can't even remember the last week. I did actually.
Carl's been hanging out with me drinking the bourbon.
That's right.
I did talk about it a little bit on the midweek show, but I do want to say, Memphis being overrated aside, I'm really, really, really impressed with Oklahoma State. I mean, they're just pounding people into submission right now. I think next to Jabari Parker, I think Marcus Smart is the best player in college basketball. I really like this Oklahoma State team. I am fully on the bandwagon of theirs.
Okay, no, I think that's perfectly fair. And, you know, you look at it's funny, they don't even, they're not even jumping off the tongues of people when you're looking at the top teams necessarily. People are still looking at Louisville or Kansas or Kentucky, but they are second right now in what is admittedly a very early Pomeroy rating, but they've been very efficient offensively so far. They've been very impressive defensively. They've been keeping their tempo up. And, you know, it's not just that they blew out Memphis, but they also blew out everybody else. They've scored no less than 93 points in every game they've played so far this year. Now, they're at South Florida tomorrow, which what on earth are they doing playing at South Florida? I mean, that's just an odd game to pop up on their schedule.
Tampa's a nice place to visit during the holidays.
I that's true, it is. But
our resident South Florida expert isn't here to answer that.
Yeah. Hopefully we get Lee on and he can explain why they're playing in South Florida. But, okay, again, here's a road game against a power conference team or a quasi-power conference team.
A weak team in a league with powerful teams.
Fair enough. You know, and then they're down in Orlando for the Old Spice this week, or Oklahoma State is, I mean. That may be why they're playing in South Florida. Maybe it's a tune-up for them flying down there. But but they play Purdue in the first game. You know, they're going to have.
Who else is in that tournament?
That's a great question.
I know Memphis is in it because there's the possibility of the Memphis rematch. I think.
Yeah, because Memphis was technically an Old Spice game, I think.
Okay.
So they could get the fourth game.
So your lineup for that is Butler, LSU, Memphis, Oklahoma State, St. Joe's, Purdue, Siena, and Washington State.
I think Oklahoma State will run roughshod all over that.
It's possible. I mean, I don't really see. Butler is not themselves this year. I mean, they needed late game heroics to beat Ball State. You know, Purdue struggled a bit in the early going against Siena today. They're not very good. Yeah, that tournament, frankly, might hurt Oklahoma State's tournament resume just because there's so many crappy teams in it.
Yeah. And, I mean, I hope they enjoy Disney World because,
Yeah. So, anyway, so that's coming up for Oklahoma State. David, anything else you'd like to mention before we move on?
Yes, just that I'd like to move on.
Okay, fair enough. So let's move on at 9:30 here. If you've got comments, please leave them on the YouTube page. We'll get to them, or you can tweet at us at hoopshd.com. You know, so we look at the overall arrangement at the top of college basketball at this stage, and, you know, still too early to really take anything going on in the Pomeroy ratings particularly seriously. You know, most of the numbers you still kind of have to take with a grain of salt because there just hasn't been enough enough numbers thrown into the system yet. But we are setting up for some interesting games coming up this week, and I wanted to spend a significant amount of time talking about those games. So, you know, on Monday of this week, Kyle, I'm going to start with you on this. We get the Maui Invitational starting, and we've got Syracuse, who's a top 10 team. They looked real bad this last week in one game in particular, as they really struggled to put away St. Francis of New York, who's been a bit of a terror to big conference teams so far this year. But Syracuse goes into the Maui. They're probably the favorite to win that tournament, but they play Minnesota in the first game. And this is like an intriguing Minnesota team. Their power numbers are way higher than most of us were expecting them to be. They haven't really played anybody of note, although they did beat Richmond pretty handily. They're 5-0 so far on the season. You got Richard Pitino. There's a little bit of mystique surrounding that situation. What do you make of Minnesota, and how do you think they fare against the Orange?
Yeah, you know, I tell you, I mean, this Minnesota team has, I mean, so far they've passed the tests. I mean, they haven't had a lot of big tests, but they passed every one. This is a dangerous game for Syracuse because right now they're very dependent on Tyler Ennis, you know, and you know, being dependent on a freshman point guard can be a little tricky at times, and they're finding that out as they found out in the St. Francis game. Minnesota I'll be intrigued to see how Minnesota fares in this because I, you know, the Hollins brothers are a very good backcourt. Minnesota's front court is a little questionable. I expect Syracuse to dominate up front, but Andre Hollins is a tough matchup for Syracuse, and I think that if there's a game that they could lose in this tournament, it might be in this first round.
Yeah, Andre Hollins, a top 150 player right now in personal offensive rating. It's interesting because you've also got DeAndre Mathieu, who has played a decent number of minutes, and he's a top 50 player in terms of assist rate. They've got a lot of really interesting superlatives as far as their stats are concerned. And, you know, again, look, you're talking about a Minnesota team whose schedule has been Lehigh, Montana, Richmond, Coastal Carolina, and Wofford. But they've won all of those games pretty handily. I mean, the closest
in
game...
Montana and Richmond, if you beat them handily, and they won at Richmond.
Yes.
That perked my ears up.
Yeah.
If it matters.
I don't know what to make of this team. And, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, I looked at this Minnesota team as kind of a fringe tournament possibility just because there were so many uncertainties. But, David, I think a lot of people had written this team off automatically because they thought, oh, you know, the Tubby Smith couldn't get this team to do anything. How is a guy who barely had any success at a small school and probably just got hired because his last name happened to be Pitino, how can he possibly wring anything out of this squad? Maybe that wasn't the assumption that we should have been making.
Well, that's the assumption I made, and I mean, I was the only game I saw them play was the game at Richmond, and I was impressed. Now, this is an interesting field. Top to bottom, the seven Div 1 teams in it, none of them have a loss yet, and I realize that like it hasn't been against the stiffest of competition, but Gonzaga's looked good in their games. This is really a great test for everybody that's in it.
Yeah, before you go, let me just set the field for you. And for those who aren't familiar with what's going on in Maui, you've got a field of eight. Now, we're going to take Chaminade out because, I mean, everybody knows Chaminade. And we have no stats on Chaminade because they're like Division 8. But you have Arkansas, Baylor, Cal, Dayton, Gonzaga, Minnesota, and Syracuse. That's your seven teams. You know, it's interesting, like you said, because Baylor's an intriguing team. Cal nominally is intriguing. I mean, some people pick them as a potential team to win the Pac-12. And then Syracuse, Minnesota, Gonzaga, they obviously need no introduction. This is a really, really interesting field.
Yeah, it is. This Dayton-Gonzaga game is interesting because Dayton, well, they have the win at Georgia Tech, but these are teams that really need wins out of conference to establish themselves. They're playing each other, and the winner, in all likelihood, is going to get Chaminade. So this is pivotal just for the sake of putting together a decent out-of-conference schedule. Like, your overall strength of schedule is going to hinge heavily on whether you win this game or not. I mean, so that's a big one.
Kyle.
First of all, let's not rule out the Silver Swords from beating Baylor here. I mean, it just seems like if an upset is going to happen, it's going to happen right here. This is just feels like a game that Baylor could lose. I don't know why. I'm not even basing it too much off of Texas losing to Chaminade last year. It just Baylor feels ripe for being upset, and this would be the kind of game that they would do it. But no, it's I like this field because it's not as powerful as it's been in years past. There's not a lot of great teams in it, but there's a lot of interesting teams that could be tournament. I mean, there could be six or seven tournament caliber teams in this field. So it'll be interesting to see how much parity there is, or if there's any parity in this. And we could have a lot of close games in this whole bracket.
Yeah, absolutely true. Well, if you look at the Pomeroy projections as of today, we don't know what they'll be as of tomorrow, but Dayton-Gonzaga. Gonzaga is favored by 7 points in that game. Cal is favored by 5 over Arkansas. Minnesota is actually favored by 1 point over Syracuse. That's take amazing. Out of that what you will. And then Baylor and Chaminade, there's no rating because Chaminade's not Division I. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's a neat field. It's got the potential to be intriguing. So we'll have to see what happens in it, obviously. But I think for Minnesota, and it actually brings up an interesting thing about this tournament, and I'm not a huge fan of it. You can win 2 games in this tournament and finish in 5th place. You can lose 2 games in this tournament and finish in 4th place. And it's just when you lose the games that ends up mattering more than anything else.
And I think we're all in agreement on this, although I don't think we've ever had this discussion, but are we all in agreement that the committee doesn't care if it's a 5th-place game, a 7th-place game, a 3rd? To them, it's a neutral court game. And in some ways, and I think we've seen this in tournaments before, teams get more credit for winning the 3rd or 5th-place game than the team that won the whole tournament gets for winning the whole tournament. It just depends on how it plays out. I mean, again, it doesn't matter. It's a neutral floor game against whoever it is you're playing. They don't view it as, well, it was the 5th-place game.
Right. I think so. Kyle, would you disagree with that?
Yeah, I don't think the trophy presentation has any bearing on as far as how the committee is looking at these games. I think they're just looking at who did you play and did you beat them.
Yeah. We've also got games not going on in Maui tomorrow that are worth looking at. Now, one game that I think is interesting is Marquette traveling to Arizona State. Now, if I took the names away from the teams and I told you that the 71st-ranked Pomeroy team was playing the 37th-ranked Pomeroy team, you would probably guess that Marquette was the higher-rated of those two teams. But, Kyle, not the case. You know, this Marquette squad has basically not been able to score so far this season. They have one of the lowest effective field goal percentages in the country. They have, like, the 4th lowest 3-point field goal shooting percentage in the country. And they're going in and playing an Arizona State team that, frankly, has looked pretty good so far. Like, I mean, again, this is they've played bad teams but not horrible teams, but they won at UNLV. They beat Bradley at home by 12. This could be a real trouble start for Marquette if they end up losing this contest, and I think it's entirely possible that they do.
When's the last time you saw the 5th-rated Ken Pomeroy defense in the country, you know, ranked 71st overall? It's just interesting. It just goes to show how bad they've been on offense so far. You know, their Pomeroy efficiency rating is 269 in the country out of 349 teams. So, yeah, they're having a lot of problems scoring. I really like their front court. I mean, Devin Gardner, he's a terrific forward. He's very tough to defend, but they just, I mean, their point guard situation is just blasphemous right now. I mean, they have problems getting the ball off the floor. They have problems getting the ball into their sets. This Arizona State team, they could have some problems with this Sun Devil club. If Marquette starts scoring the ball in the backcourt, you know, they're going to be a very good team by season's end. But right now, they got some issues there.
It's always a bad sign. And you know, I don't read too much into this because these aren't guys that are playing all of their minutes. But they have 2 players on their roster, Juan Anderson and John Dawson, who are their turnover rate is over 30%, which that means, if you're not familiar with turnover rate, on the possessions that those players use, they're turning the ball over 30% or more of the time that they use a possession. That's awful. Like that's almost grounds for losing a scholarship level bad. Like that's just, it's not a good situation. So that's a game to watch. And you know, Marquette loses that game. Now they're 3-2, and there's a team that's rapidly running out of games that they can point to in their non-conference and say, hey, look at this. They still have to travel to Wisconsin, David Griggs. They still have to travel, or they play New Mexico on a neutral floor. They, you know, and then they dive into an uncertain Big East.
Yeah, and when you look at the Big East, is the Big East properly establishing itself to get 4 and 5 teams in? Because if you look at them, I think there's 10 teams in the league. I counted a total of 18 road games, like true road games. That's less than 2 per team. Like, so if all you do, and we've seen this in the past, and you guys alluded to it earlier, and I was going to kind of mention it, but like, if all you do is sit at home and beat up on cupcakes, you're not doing anything to establish yourself as a tournament team. You're basically taking a pass on making a case for yourself. And if your entire league does that, I mean, how many teams can the Big East get in? What are the good wins for the Big East so far? You had Georgetown getting a big one today. Has there been any others?
Well, I mean, I'll go through this, and this is the dirty jobs part of our podcast here. Mike Rowe would be proud of us. Creighton won at St. Joe's. Does that count?
That's a C plus. Yeah, that's decent. I mean, okay. St. Joe's, it's not easy to win there.
Villanova
passing grade.
Yeah, what? It's a passing grade.
It's a passing grade. Villanova beat Delaware at home.
Oh, for crying.
Georgetown beat VCU on a neutral floor. That's the best one so far. Xavier won in a rock fight at home versus Tennessee.
You know, I'm going to stop you right here because I will point out until today, this was the best the ACC had done.
The rock fight versus Tennessee?
But no, I mean, my point is that you've already listed a better resume than the ACC has.
Okay, very fair point. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, but I think the idea of the overall RPI establishment going into the conference, I mean, you're going to have Duke as a high-level RPI team. You know that. You're going to have North Carolina, Virginia. That's going to help drag up the rest of the conference. Where's that coming from in the Big East at this stage?
Yeah, I mean, it may not happen. And Xavier, they're down in the battle for Atlantis. They need to do well down there. God dang! I mean, yeah. Charlotte. Just...
It's kind of a double whammy because not only are they not getting big out of conference wins, but they're losing a lot of so-so games, and so they're not even going to have a strong RPI because their overall winning percentage isn't that great.
The reason looking to my left there, folks, and the reason that David Griggs is cursing under his serpentine breath is that Charlotte has a 3-point lead on Michigan with 14 seconds remaining in the contest, and Michigan's going to the line, but Charlotte had free throws to put them up by more than one possession, and they missed them, David.
Yes, and there's just something about Conference USA teams building 5-point leads in the final minute against ranked teams and losing. That's becoming a disturbing trend for the conference. This would be a...
You know, Gail, I will say...
Yes, go
for
ahead.
For as many times as we swing and miss on predictions, like, we were right to be skeptical of this Michigan club early in the year. They certainly have not been a top 10 club.
I mean, you know, Look, I think at the end of the season, the losing at Iowa State's not going to be a shame, but the way that they lost to them is troubling. You know, I think that having to go to overtime to beat Florida State, that's going to remain questionable regardless, because I just don't think that Florida State team's going to be that good. Okay, so now there's been a
there's a tie up, and Michigan has the ball down too with 11 seconds to go.
Yeah, there was a jump ball. If you want to watch this, folks, it's on ESPN2 right now, and you can safely turn away from the Broncos Patriots game, I think, because that's been a turnover festival of epic proportions, and the Broncos are up 24-0, I believe. But we'll take you home on this game. As they're showing some Michigan fans.
Charlotte
right
needs this win because, I mean, talk about a team void or a conference void of quality right now.
Well, do they really? I mean, aren't they already pretty much screwed? I mean, Charlotte lost. Granted, it was a road game, but they already lost to College of Charleston, who's not.
Yeah, it's
very
their
good
only loss. I think if they don't stub their toes any more than that, I think you can kind of forgive that if they can pick up a win like this. But, I mean. They did themselves no favors by losing that game out in Charleston.
They did beat Kansas State. That might be a worse victory than beating Northeastern by the end of the season.
Well, Kansas State is so awful that, like, I mean, beating Kansas State's becoming more of a pastime than an accomplishment.
Does Bruce Weber survive this year? Since we're killing some time here while we're waiting for this game to end. I mean, they already lost to Northern Colorado, Charlotte, and then they lost by 27 points to Georgetown. They, you know, they've still got to play Gonzaga. They've still got Mississippi on the schedule, and
they're not going to win any of those.
And then they go into a Big 12 season, and right now, you would have to rank, you know, Kansas ahead of them. You'd have to rank Oklahoma State ahead of them, Oklahoma ahead of them, Iowa State ahead of them, Baylor ahead of them. I mean,
I mean, to answer your question and to borrow a line from Jeremy Fuller, fully 1,000%.
So we're getting the inbounds play coming up here. Lee Delvecchio is getting set to join us here shortly, so we're looking forward to bringing him on the podcast.
I'm the bear.
Yes, we're looking for Todd Bearsman right now. Oh, and Charlotte just allowed Michigan to run the Illinois inbounds play that they ran against Indiana.
Does that count?
It counts.
Okay, I didn't think you got it because...
Oh, and yes, Charlotte just scored at the buzzer. And I believe, Charlotte, you're way ahead of me, David. I just want to mention
that. Oh, I'm sorry. Now the issue is this a technical foul?
Well, no, it won't be a technical foul because the clock went to triple zero. They're not going to call a technical foul if the clock's reading triple zero. But Charlotte scored on a layup. That was the weirdest layup sequence I think I've ever seen. Did you see that one, Kyle?
No, I did. No, my feed went out.
Yeah. Though there will be 5/10 of a second left, David. But for those of you who weren't watching this, the guy put the ball up. It bounced off the backboard. He put it back up himself, and, you know, I just noticed All-American Mitch McGarry did not grab that rebound. That's shocking.
Sarcasm.
Yeah, there a very mild amount of sarcasm, Lee, absolutely. But anyway.
Wait a minute. There we go.
That's good. Thank you for adding the Connecticut Huskies sticker to Todd Bearsman there. We appreciate that.
That's why I'm here.
So we're going to talk about that IU-Connecticut game in just a second, but we want to wrap
this. I appreciate you waiting. I'm sorry I was late. I had a fabulous afternoon of Louisville, North Carolina, and some fine casino gaming.
Hey, we want to get your impressions on that Louisville, North Carolina game as well, but we'll wrap up this Charlotte, Michigan game first. 4/10 of a second left, guys, and
Have it on, so go nuts.
Well, we will. So they're in San Juan, and it looks like, I mean, could you throw to anybody but Stauskas here? I mean, really?
Is it tied?
No, Charlotte's up 2.
Oh, 4/10 of a second.
Charlotte just won.
Thanks for ruining the surprise. Oh. God, you're like 9 seconds ahead of me, David. That's incredible.
Wait. We've got... No.
All right, game over. So Charlotte knocks off Michigan. Michigan with their second loss of the season.
Is this another sport where Kyle's going to falsely claim Ohio State's the best team in the Big Ten? Or the country. I meant to say the country.
I can say that, and you can pick your sport.
Yeah, well, I will say Ohio State offensively struggling right now a bit, but they've defensively looked probably easily like the best team in the conference at this stage. So, and in fact, they look like the best team in the country defensively. But anyway, so Lee, you were at. Let's start with the North Carolina game. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but. You were there, obviously, so your impressions of that game and of the two teams.
I was incredibly disappointed in Louisville. I mean, they seemed very passive. They weren't into the game. They had their offense had really no motion going to it. It was basically the Russ Smith show, especially in the first half. Louisville went out to a nice lead. They were up, I believe, 12-4. And then after that, they really stagnated on offense for about the last 10 minutes of the first half. And, you know, for a while they were at least trading baskets. And then the second half, they had no offense to speak of, no motion. I was very impressed by North Carolina on the other end, very shorthanded. You know, I've given Roy Williams as much of a hard time as anyone else on our podcast and everyone else does outside of our podcast. But I thought he did a superb job in terms of substitutions, cycling players in and out, avoiding any real big foul trouble, considering he didn't have a whole lot to work with. Especially compared to Louisville. And, I mean, Hancock was really a non-factor. I was just very impressed with North Carolina. They're also a much bigger team than I thought. They have a lot more size, and I think Louisville may not have expected that because I thought the rebounding for Louisville was very poor, and I thought, I mean, I couldn't remember Louisville getting one clean rebound for the last 30 minutes of the game, and North Carolina seemed to just dominate the glass from where I was sitting. And I was very impressed with North Carolina, and that after the game, it really meant a lot to them. I mean, Hubert Davis, more than anyone else, they were going nuts when they won that thing. They came back out. That was a huge effort for them to get up for that game against a very good Louisville team, and they thoroughly deserved the win they got. I was very impressed with the Tar Heels.
Well, their defense was very good. I mean, the holding Louisville to 39% basically from the field. And
I mean, Louisville's offense was basically when Russ Smith gets the ball, he's going to shoot a three. And outside of that, we're not going to try and establish a post game. We're not going to really pass effectively around the perimeter or inbound it very effectively either. And we're going to commit bad hand check fouls 40 feet from the basket. That seemed to really be their game plan. And it wasn't too effective.
This is going to be an ongoing issue for Louisville all season. They cannot have Russ Smith and Chris Jones chucking up 45 shots a game. That's not going to be a recipe for success. They're going to have to find offense from somebody else.
The other thing about them is, and Galen, we'll segue, the issue for IU is that they don't really have a second ball handler. I don't know that Louisville does either. And that's a problem. I mean, it's funny because going into the game, we knew that Carolina was down a ball handler. I didn't really see much from Louisville in guard play that really would make me think, oh, yeah, this is a team that can really compete for a Final Four spot. I know they're good, but, I mean, they were shockingly poor handling the ball.
You would have thought the dozens of preseason basketball writer previews of Louisville might have picked up on the fact that they don't have a second ball handler. But shockingly, everybody missed that.
I'm sure Rick Pitino didn't mention it in his, media hosted dinners.
Well, I had been saying Louisville was number one. I didn't miss it. I just thought that they would overcome it. Really, it's just like Louisville just didn't get back on defense ever. I mean, mm-hmm. It's just like, why bother? It was, wow.
So let's,
I wonder if the short turnaround might have hurt them a little bit. They had played in the later game yesterday. It was a 1 o'clock tip-off. I mean, those are all excuses. The bottom line is they did not look ready for this game. Carolina hit them in the mouth. They attacked inside, and they played very well.
Yeah, they just thought they should be playing Belmont.
Right. Yeah.
The weird thing. The game ends, and the first game of the day is the championship game, and they present the Dave Gavitt Trophy. No, not the Big East Tournament MVP. There's a second one, apparently. As the champions of the tournament to North Carolina, which I vehemently disagree with. Belmont should get that trophy. If Belmont beats Hofstra, and they're playing right now, I'm not sure what the score is. I actually didn't stay just to be with you guys. I really wanted to watch Belmont, but Hofstra's pretty bad. if Belmont wins tonight, Belmont should get the trophy.
Well, I agree because,
Belmont,
what about Richmond?
To Richmond, so I don't know. And Richmond... for a moment, Fairfield and Sidney Johnson, they are terrible. That Richmond absolutely embarrassed Fairfield today. It's one thing for Hartford to score 14 in the first half, but I expect more from Fairfield. Richmond destroyed them.
Yeah.
It was shocking.
Well, let's since we don't have a whole lot of additional time, let's jump back and talk about that UConn-Indiana game since we were both at it. Let me get your impressions first, and then I'll just kind of chime in.
The move that won the game for UConn was with a few minutes to go. I can't remember exactly when he subbed in, maybe 5 minutes to go. Kevin Ollie put in Lasan Chroma, who's the graduate transfer student from George Washington. He's a 2,000-point scorer at George Washington. More importantly, he's about 6'5". And he had Chroma guard Yogi Ferrell for the rest of the game, and that was what changed the game because he completely was able to lock up Yogi Ferrell and the pick and roll game for Indiana was non-existent from there out. I thought that was the move that basically won what was, well, not the cleanest play. It was a very entertaining game in a tremendous environment. The only other game I've been at in the Garden, I've been to a lot that reminded me of that somewhat. Other than a Big East tournament game against Syracuse was. UConn played Kentucky John Wall's year, and the Garden was the same way. It was more full, but the crowd was electric.
Yeah.
The crowd was probably 55-45 in terms of number Indiana, but it was clearly UConn clearly had the louder fans. Everyone who's objective knows that. And, But no, both fan bases were equally loud. It was, I thought that was the move that won the game. I'll say this for Tom Crean. I don't know. I know Noah Vonleh is good, but he had had a poor night, and I mean, Galen, we discussed this. The play wasn't for Vonleh to get the shot. I understand that, but that's what ended up happening.
And right.
What I told you was the one thing if I'm Indiana I want to do is I want to go with Brima and probably try and get a foul, even though Brima, if he's good at nothing else, and he probably is good at nothing else, it's he just goes straight up every time. He doesn't commit. He commits fouls when guys go into him. And the problem is they got it to Vonleh, and he's got to go over Brima. Instead of going into him, he tries a fadeaway.
And I
told you, the one thing you can't do if you're Indiana is don't catch the ball going away from the basket with less than a second left.
Well,
and they gave it to a guy who's going away from the basket.
Well,
never got a shot off.
It was a combination of things. It was a bad entry pass thrown by a guy who isn't really the one that I would want throwing entry passes.
Who
and
would you have had inbounding it there? I'm just curious.
I mean, I think
it can't be Yogi.
It can't be Yogi. I mean, I think since they didn't look to Sheehy as an option, I'd rather have Sheehy throwing the inbounds pass. I'm not really that interested in seeing Jeremy Hollowell through the. I'd rather have Jeremy Hollowell on right at all. But I mean, if you're gonna have him doing it, or have Evan Gordon, who's at least got 4 years in his back pocket of handling the ball and throwing passes, have him throw the inbounds pass. It was a very puzzling thing.
I think their concern there is if you have Gordon inbounding it, whoever UConn has guard him, other than Boatwright, is going to be taller than him, and I don't think Boatwright would have guarded the inbounds pass because they wouldn't want to lose the speed on a catch.
Yeah, but that, you know what? But they had a 6'8 guy throw the ball inbounds, and it was probably the worst possible throw that you could have as far as the location of you know who you throw it to. But look, the game wasn't lost on the last play of the game. The game was lost on the second to last play of the game when they had 21 seconds left on the clock, and they decided it would be a great idea to dribble the ball all the way down and then have Yogi Ferrell drive 1-on-4, which hadn't worked all second half. Why they thought it would work at that point is beyond me.
I would say the game was lost in a more generic sense when Yogi Ferrell tried to best Shabazz Napier. I mean, when he got to the point where he was trying to match him tit for tat, that's when the game was over because, I mean, Farrell's offense has definitely improved, but he's not Shabazz Napier, and he was trying too hard to win a one-on-one matchup rather than just keep working for shots, which Indiana had been doing in the second half and doing a good job of.
I'll tell you, I thought he actually did a pretty good job of going tit for tat. I'm a big Yogi fan. I thought he played very well. I mean, that for me, you talk about the game being lost. You can't have Tyler Olander cleanly stealing the ball from you on a one-possession game with 2 minutes to go. That you just kind of automatically are given the loss at that point. that's a thing that, like, I want to stress cannot happen.
Right.
That might have been one of the five most shocking things I've ever seen at a UConn game in person. I thought Indiana did this UConn team kind of rebounds to the level of its competition, Galen. I mean, they couldn't rebound against Yale, but they've done very well against Indiana and Maryland. So rebounding's still a concern, but I guess the one good thing is they've got a lot of close game experience. They've won 3 games in New York by 3 total points, and that's with DeAndre Daniels playing pretty poor in at least 2 of them.
Yeah,
and
I think
as well.
No, I think UConn's in good shape moving forward. I mean, that game will be a good one on their resume, and you know, I think that is, you know, Boston College, I think, is going to be a good win on their resume. Hold on. I think from a power number perspective, I think it will be. Maybe not so much from a they won't Boston College won't end up in the bottom 100 or below the 100 mark in the RPI. I don't think.
Oh, I bet they got it in them.
You think?
I think BC, you
look at their numbers right now, and I know they've lost games, but all 4 of their losses have been to but 3 of their 4 losses have been to teams that are up there in the power rankings. Their offense is one of the best in the country. They're going to pick up some wins down the stretch here in December.
They've got to beat Harvard one of these decades. I mean,
right.
If they get that, that'll be – I think BC will win at least twice against the combo of – Carolina, Duke, Syracuse, Notre Dame, Pitt, which maybe not Pitt won't help as much, but if they get at least 1 or 2 wins out of that group somehow, that will do wonders for the computer numbers of them, and of course of Washington, who you know, I wasn't very impressed with Washington.
No, I They were anybody considering them as part of the Pac-12 contingent to the postseason probably needs to stop watching basketball.
They're very good at scoring,
and more importantly, stop commenting on basketball.
Yes, that as well. But no, I think overall
I love this Washington team.
The games are entertaining because they don't play defense.
No,
they
none.
Score a lot of points.
I don't think they're good, but man.
And if you're Galen, you can make off-color Sean Kemp jokes. So there's
yes.
that.
We won't speak of that, but no. Anyway, so you know, as we move forward here, a few more games we want to talk about before we wrap things up this week, guys. We've got Wisconsin St. Louis in the Cancun Challenge coming up on Tuesday.
Love this tournament. It's in a ballroom. If you haven't watched it, they literally play in a ballroom. It's incredible. Like there's chandeliers all over the court.
Go ahead, Lee. What?
No, I think you summed it up. They play in a ballroom.
Yeah. You've also got SMU, who did lose. Who did they lose to?
They lost to Arizona State.
Okay, not a bad loss.
No.
But they play Sam Houston in the Corpus Christi Challenge. You know, so that's
they
that's
don't have. Be... Do they have TVs down there yet? Because I remember following that tournament, there was no radio and no video.
Corpus Christi.
You mean at the tournament or in the city of Corpus Christi, Texas?
Yes,
it's on ESPN3, David. So you're in good shape there.
Who are the other teams in that besides Sam Houston and SMU?
I have no idea. Let me look.
Presumably, Corpus Christi's in it.
Right. Well, because my point is, this is another one of those. I mean, they didn't win Arizona State, but
Texas A&M and Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Did you say A&M?
Yeah, Texas A&M and Arkansas.
Corpus Christi's not in their own tournament. I love it. All right.
Hold on a second here. If this one, the Sam Houston game, this is not part of the actual game. I hate this. This is so friggin' confusing. This is not part of the actual games in Corpus Christi. This is a prelude game. The actual tournament happens on the 29th and 30th, and you get Liberty, Hampton, Sam Houston, Pine Bluff, Virginia, SMU, Texas A&M, and Missouri State.
Galen, I think you're a great host, but why did you bring this up?
Well, I brought it up because I think SMU is an interesting team still.
Yeah.
That's why I brought it up.
He didn't mean to segue into the tournament itself. It just was an unfortunate byproduct.
It was just a game. I was just trying to mention that.
I'm the one that took it that way, but you got to know when to like head that off.
Well, yeah, I mean, I trust my commentators. I guess I should learn not to do that.
I was going to mention this one, actually, or SMU in general off the Arizona State game. This is a tournament where they have to at least play Virginia in the final. I want any answers about SMU if they want to be a tournament team. This is a chance for them to show they can hang. These are terrible teams around them. No Hampton upsets here. I need SMU in the final, and then I will consider them because they're off to a solid start. They've just got to, you know, they don't need to beat Virginia, but they've got to at least play Virginia in the title game. They can't afford, it's not just not the loss they would take, but Galen, who they would be playing instead.
Yeah.
Instead of playing Virginia, you've got a lot of teams that can only kill you. And that includes A&M, by the way, because they're awful.
I agree. And actually, SMU didn't lose to Arizona State. They lost to Arkansas.
That was the one. They lost rather badly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. They really weren't in the game from the tip.
Later on in the week, on Wednesday, and I'm just kind of going through some of the highlights now, you've got the NIT semifinal at Madison Square Garden. You've got the 7 o'clock game is Arizona and Drexel. Arizona's looked pretty good to start the season. I think everybody can agree on that. Drexel is... I mean, they did lose that game to UCLA early, but they've looked okay otherwise.
And they looked good in that game. I thought. I mean, I know you.
I thought they looked fine. I didn't think that. Yeah. I didn't think they looked bad in the UCLA game.
Okay. This is the 15th straight year of Bruiser Flinch Drexel looking kind of okay, but maybe they're still not a tournament team. But
right.
They're gonna lose to James Madison and Towson. I mean, that's Drexel. I mean,
they won't be bad enough to fire Bruiser, but they'll keep him, and they won't actually go anywhere. It's fascinating. Right.
Yeah, it really is.
You've also got the second game, Alabama-Duke. You know, if Alabama wants to do anything this season, Kyle, they probably need to, at the very least, be competitive in this game. But, you know, the way Duke's defense looks, you would think Alabama should be able to compete somewhat. Can they?
Well, I mean, if East Carolina and Vermont can put up 80 and 90 points respectively, then if Alabama can't compete in this game, they've got problems themselves. And the thing for Alabama is that the SEC looks like there's not a lot of quality wins in that league. So it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Alabama especially is going to need to pick up a quality win someplace, and this is as good an opportunity as any.
But, Kyle, let me keep it with you on this. So if we assume that it holds according to seeding and Duke and Arizona face off, obviously that's the matchup most people want. Who do you like in that matchup right now?
I like Arizona right now, the way they're playing. I think that, you know, Arizona is more physical than Duke, and Duke hasn't learned how to defend anybody yet. The overplay defense has always been a problem for Duke against athletic teams. It's especially a problem right now against unathletic teams, let alone against a team like Arizona. So I like Arizona in this matchup if it comes to fruition.
David, let me go to you next.
Arizona. I got kind of excited when I saw Duke just run over Davidson, but everybody's been running over Davidson since then. Duke has struggled, and they struggled today against a team that really isn't even good, even by America East standards, I don't think. No, so I like Arizona big.
Lee?
I like Arizona, although I fear I might be regretting saying that in about 2 months, even though it's about this game. I wish I could have been on with David when Vermont had the 4-point play and won. I'm imagining the screaming, and I would have been right there with you.
Yeah.
If they're giving up 90 points to Vermont, I don't know what they're going to do against this Arizona team. I have serious questions about Duke off of that defensive. I don't want to say effort, although I guess they have the defense. They're emotionally distraught, having lost the field hockey national championship game earlier today at the University of Connecticut, who won their 16th team national championship today. Congratulations to Nancy Stevens and the girls.
Oh, my God.
I'm taking Arizona over Duke in what should be a very exciting championship game. I don't think it'll be Arizona big. I think Jabari Parker in the stage in New York, I think he's right now kind of dragging Duke over the finish line in these games. I expect no less from him to keep them in it against Arizona, but I think Arizona wins a very high-scoring game.
Yeah, it will be high-scoring, I think, without question. If they play each other, obviously, they still have to get through their first competitors. But you know what? I'm going to say Duke because – I need to actually see this Arizona team do something against top-level competition. I like the win that they had at San Diego State. That was a nice win. That's still not enough for me at this stage. I mean, I want to see them. Yeah, I want to see them play a really good team like Duke on a neutral floor and win. They don't even have to win handily. I just want to see them win that game, and we'll see where they're at that stage. Couple others real quick before we go. Arizona State Creighton, David. This one, 11 o'clock at night on Thanksgiving. This is the Wooden Legacy in Fullerton. I have no clue what that is, but this should be a fun game. We talked about Arizona State earlier. Creighton's got one of the best offenses in college basketball right now.
Yeah, it is. And Arizona State, again, it's just they haven't done anything overly incredible, but it's just we had just assumed that they were going to be so bad, and they're not. They haven't lost yet, so I mean, it'll just be interesting to see what they do in this game. I mean, that's the best way you can describe it. What can they do against a Creighton team that I think we all think is pretty legit?
Yeah. Lee,
it's a great under-the-radar. You know, we talk about the freshmen matching up against each other, but you got a couple of real legit stars, All-American-level players in this game. You got to overcome the tryptophan, though, folks. You got to get some chocolate cream pie to make it through to that late. And the Wooden Legacy has been around for a few years. They usually play it at the Honda Center, so Fullerton will be I guess it's a realization of the crowd size.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to see what that's like. But I'm really excited for that game, more than anything in Maui, if I'm honest.
Yeah, you've got a couple others in the Wooden Legacy. The 2 o'clock game is Miami-George Washington. That could be a bloodbath, unfortunately. You've got Charleston and San Diego State. That could also be a bloodbath. And then you've got, actually in the midst of those two, Marquette playing Cal State Fullerton. And that's Marquette coming off of a game against Arizona State right before. So that'll
Marquette,
be interesting to see.
Who did not look very good against New Hampshire.
Yeah,
I will return to in my closing argument.
We talked about them at length before you joined the podcast. They're in some significant trouble. Kyle, last one I'll mention, the Las Vegas Invitational going on, and you've got in that Nevada playing UCLA, not expecting a whole lot of that game, but Northwestern Missouri. This looks like a prime candidate for a Frank Hathing, does it not?
Yeah.
And this would be a Frank Hathing, because this Northwestern club is bad. It's really bad, and I would almost feel bad for Missouri fans if they lose this game, and I just hope for their sake that Missouri beats Alabama in the SEC championship, because you know that'll make them feel a little better. I want to say, if this is the last game you're mentioning on Thursday, it really needs to be pointed out, a game I'm looking forward to the most is the battle, the number four Atlantis, Iowa and Xavier. That's going to be a really, really good matchup. Iowa has been throttling everybody. Xavier's playing really well. I'm really excited to see these two play.
No, that's a good point, and that one, for whatever reason, that didn't pop up on my screen. But that's a 7 o'clock game at night. It's on NBC Sports Network. That should be a lot of fun. You know, one that might be of interest, too, is right after that. UTEP plays Tennessee.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, neither of those teams are necessarily good, but they could both end up in the NCAA tournament. UTEP by winning Conference USA and Tennessee by virtue of an at-large bid. So there are definitely some things to keep an eye on. And then, of course, the big one, of course, at the end of the day, the midnight game, Harvard versus Denver in the Great Alaska Shootout. Denver trying to salvage something in this early going, and Harvard trying to prove all of the pundits wrong who ranked them in the top 25 this year.
Yeah.
Whoa, they,
well, no, they're the best team in New England, y'all, remember? I mean, Jeff Goodman
said
so.
Jeff Goodman said so. Anyway, we're going to wrap up. We're about 10 minutes over time. Let me get final thoughts. Let me start with Lee, actually.
Well, I mentioned a minute ago Marquette struggling against New Hampshire, and it's occurred to me recently, this is the best that New England college basketball has been in a very long time. UConn's been very good. UMass has been excellent so far, really exciting. Yeah. I wish UConn and UMass played, actually, to watch Williams versus Napier. Providence has been solid. Harvard is good. Vermont tonight, who's not even any good, but Vermont takes Duke to the wall. And you've also got New Hampshire, who's not going to win America East, but they actually won at Duquesne this season and played well at Marquette, which might be the two greatest performances in New Hampshire basketball history. It's just kind of an interesting time. And also Bryant in the NEC is expected to be good this year. So
yeah.
It's a you know, as awful as all of the college football teams are in New England, the basketball teams have been very good, and I'm hoping people, you know, get out to watch teams like UMass and Providence along with UConn, because there's a lot of really good teams up here. It might be the first time in a while that this region has, you know, three NCAA at-large bids.
Yeah. Final thoughts from you, David.
I'm just big on the Atlantic 10 this year. I mean, I know it's early, but I think as a whole, the conference has outperformed the Big East, which, you know, some of the teams that were supposedly leaving the A-10 and transitioning up, the A-10's better this year. I mean, I don't know if it'll be that way long term, but it's better this year, and you could argue that it's outperformed the ACC and the SEC as well. UMass is very good. St. Louis is undefeated. Dayton got a nice win at Georgia Tech the other night. They got a big tournament coming about in Maui. GW's had a decent win. Even Mason, despite the fact that Paul Hewitt is still coaching there, they're out to a 4-1 start. Yeah. And VCU, I think they're going to turn it around. Richmond, I was really disappointed in them coming into this, but I think this weekend they finally looked like the team that
really
I think we were expecting them to be.
They look great today.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that at all.
Yeah, and they looked good yesterday. So
yeah.
I think they finally kind of come out of their funk, and maybe Minnesota's better than we thought, so it wasn't all that garbage after all. LaSalle is struggling early, but they were a Sweet 6 team last year with everybody back. This is a solid conference. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch for the rest of the year and then once conference play starts. I mean, no one's really talking about them yet, but there's a lot of tournament teams in this conference. It's not a one-bid league.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Kyle, final thoughts from you.
Yeah, I just have two brief sentiments. I want to echo the thoughts about UMass. I've been really, really impressed with them this year. They look like they're going to be back in the tournament finally. It's been probably a long time coming for Minutemen fans. So
yeah.
Really, really impressed with the way they look. And also, quick shout out to the Toledo Rockets, who are now 6-0. It's a paperless 6-0. But 6-0 nonetheless.
They beat BC. I mean, yeah, okay, it's paper.
No, yeah, it's paper. No, it's right. But no, I'll just say this is always a fun week. You know, there's so many good games. And I guess for me, what I love is I love game volume. I like it when there's a bunch of games going on simultaneously and when those games last from noon until like 3 a.m. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like this is one of the few times during the college basketball season this week when we really get that in force. We don't really get it during Christmas break. We get it during the conference tournament week, and we get it during the first week of the NCAA. So this is really probably, for me, my third favorite week of college basketball, and I'm looking forward to it. I think there's a lot of neat teams out there, and as I see more and more teams, I like what I see so far this season. I like the fact that there's a lot of inconsistency. I like the fact that we don't really know a whole lot yet. And what we thought we knew in some cases, like we talked about earlier on with some of these teams, is actually turning out to be incorrect. So, anyway, that's going to wrap it up. We'll be back sometime later in the week. I don't know. It might be Wednesday. Maybe, maybe not. It might be Friday. We'll just have to wait and see. But we'll keep you posted on the Twitter feed. My thanks to my panelists. My thanks to all you folks listening in, either live on video or on the podcast. And my thanks to the city of New York and Madison Square Garden. Thank you for a wonderful week. But
my thanks to Tom Crean, who is still the best.
Does Bearsman have a float as well?
He kind of does one of these things over the city.
Well, you'll be watching for at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade for the David Griggs and Todd Bearsman floats. So.
Yes,
he was voted the sixth man of the 2K Sports Classic to support the Wounded Warrior product.
Yeah, it was quite an accomplishment for Todd. Yeah, I was.
Dave wasn't, or Galen wasn't there because he took off up the steps the minute the horn went off. Which was kind of interesting.
I was not a happy guy at the end of that game. That was a poor way to finish things off. Anyway, for Lee DelVecchio, for David Griggs, for Kyle Lamb, I'm Galen Clavio. This has been the Bracket Racket on Hoops HD, folks. We'll catch you on the flip side. Have a happy Thanksgiving. So long, everybody.